Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 24th of November. This hour of the program, we have two great hours, actually. We're going to be talking the second hour of our show with David Plouffe, who is the campaign manager for Barack Obama's successful run for the presidency. He has a book that documents that whole experience. For those of you who are political junkies, it's a great read. It's The Audacity to Win, the inside story and lessons of Barack Obama's landslide, or rather historic victory, and David will be with us the second hour of our program today. First hour of the show, yesterday at the White House, President Obama launched the Educate to Innovate campaign. It's a nationwide effort to help reach the goal this administration has set, moving to the top in science and math education in the next decade. At the White House, leaders from private companies and universities, foundations, and nonprofit organizations representing millions of scientists, engineers, and teachers from across America and students. National Science Foundation and the Department of Energy under the leadership of Stephen Chu, he said, have launched an initiative to inspire tens of thousands of students to pursue careers in clean energy. This is a massive effort. It involves television stations who will be putting science education programs on the air during after-school hours. Sesame Street will be devoting many more of their segments to science and math education. There will be incentives and prizes for even video games that have science learning as their focus. So we're going to talk about all of this hour. We'll have several guests with us. Joining us the last part of the program is the executive director of the National Science Teachers Association. Joining us the first half hour, Professor Susan Millar, who's a senior scientist with the University of Wisconsin-Madison's Wisconsin Center for Education Research and director of the Education Research and Development Group of the Wisconsin Institutes for Research. Professor Terry Millar is a professor of mathematics at UW-Madison and the project director of Change for All Learners and Educators, a comprehensive math and science partnership. And we'll be welcoming your phone calls as we talk about this, how to get the United States on top again when it comes to math and science education. We're not faring very well when it looks at what's going on globally. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And because you both have the same last name, I think I'll have to call you Susan and Terry. Otherwise, it would be Professor Millar and Professor Millar. And who are we talking to? Susan and Terry, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you for inviting us.
Our pleasure.
Yeah. This was quite a massive effort that was announced, isn't it? We got scientists and teachers and television stations and big companies in America. Tell me about the massive nature and what you think of this idea.
Well, I'd like to say that what's interesting to me about this, speaking from the standpoint of a person who's been studying education reform efforts in math, science, and engineering for some 15 to 20 years now, is that a strictly sort of academic, research-oriented approach to improving STEM education does not appear to be sufficient. There's been a huge investment nationally, particularly by the National Science Foundation and the Department of Education, as well as other national agencies and some state agencies, and a number of private organizations, Howard Hughes, MacArthur, Ford, many others. But we haven't seen a lot of improvement, as the numbers that the president indicated yesterday would make clear. So this idea of turning to a broader range of constituents, the business community, and even the popular culture community is represented by video games and all kinds of public organizations of scientists and so forth, seems to me an absolutely essential next step, because we just can't keep trying the process that was in place for the last 15 to 20 years.
Mm-hmm. And when Susan talks about a strictly academic approach, Terry, what do we mean by that? How has it been taught? Just in the classroom, here's the information, learn it?
That, yes, definitely. I mean, mathematicians, I'm a mathematician, and mathematicians say, here's the material, here are the key principles. What mathematicians are not so good at, or many mathematicians are, the pedagogical techniques needed to do that. So on the other side of the street in the university, you have math education researchers, and they do very focused attempts, research-based, to make improvements that research show are valid. The problem with that is it's too slow-paced, and the mathematicians and the math educators, math education researchers, for instance, in my opinion, don't work together enough. And so this trying to factor improvement through university settings is, I think, necessary, but it's, as Susan said, not sufficient.
Mm-hmm. Actually, could I take a minute to just tell you a little story that comes that I think will illustrate this point about research?
Of course.
And it's a little controversial, but on the other hand, the point here is to convey some ideas. So several years ago, I was working with the director of the education programs for ExxonMobil, a fellow named Ed Onert, who's now retired. And I gave him a detailed account of a quasi-experimental study that I conducted with colleagues of mine here in the chemistry department at UW-Madison. And what we did in this study was to look at two different approaches to teaching first-year physical chemistry. This is a pretty well-known study that's been published. And in short, the study produced really strong comparative, qualitative and quantitative evidence that one approach, an approach that really comes out of a lot of the research on improving science education, produced greater and more persistent learning gains than the traditional approach, and the traditional approach was presented by an award-winning faculty educator here. So after this long explanation, Ed responded by saying that that this was very interesting, but he had a question for me, and that was, has this proven approach been adopted, that was demonstrated to work better, been adopted by anybody at UW-Madison besides the innovator? Well, my answer was no. And there's many reasons why the answer is no. Well, his response was, well, so we have a study that provides convincing evidence that one approach is better than another, and nothing's being taken up. People are not utilizing this research-based evidence. So his assessment was that the university has an ethics problem. And then he went on to explain that if he were being treated in a medical environment and he learned that the medical practitioner had chosen to provide him a treatment that wasn't as good as scientifically proven alternative methods, that would be an ethical problem also. But that ethical problem is taken seriously. And one of the things that has always stuck with me about that conversation with Ed Onert is that there's something about the way we do education. In some sense, we're less concerned about evidence-driven change, the importance of evidence in fostering change in education than we are in, say, medicine. So that just points to larger cultural issues that I think we have to get hold of. And by shifting the question about how to improve the way our young people learn math, science, and engineering into this broader public space where there's more a question of values by our society at large in play, I think this is extremely exciting.
Yeah. The president yesterday said because a great teacher is the single most important factor in a great education, we're asking states to focus on teacher effectiveness and make it possible for professionals like many of the people in the room and the people who were gathered yesterday to bring their experience and enthusiasm into the classroom. What do we do, Terry, to help teachers, and are they the single most important factor?
Yes, I believe that that's absolutely essential. I mean, many approaches, unfortunately, are geared toward replace the teacher or substitute for the teacher. I think the adults in the system, the teachers, their profession is one that's undervalued by our society, maybe not explicitly, but implicitly. And that every effort that we can make to improve the content and pedagogical content knowledge of teachers is very important. So, for instance, in this $35 million project that I'm the PI and project director on, we had Los Angeles Unified School District, Denver Public Schools, Madison Public Schools, and Providence, Rhode Island Public Schools. And one of the things we really tried to do was get faculty in the math and sciences to work substantively with the math and science leaders in those districts to design professional development programs for in-service teachers and for the pre-service courses that future teachers would take, all right, so that the teachers are better equipped both in terms of what they're taught and the social networks that are established so they can do their job with children better. So, yes. I think the president is absolutely right. Teachers are the place where we should focus our efforts.
But, I'd like to just add to that, which because I was really struck by the president's pointing out the nature of the high status of teachers in China and, I guess...
Yes.
This in South Korea. This is very, very important, and it goes back to this point of we can do all these things to support the professional development of our teachers, but... if their salaries are low and their sense of respect within society at large is not high, there will be more teacher turnover. And there is a great deal of teacher turnover in our society. So our investment in these excellent professional development resources and opportunities doesn't necessarily stick.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk just a moment about what may be considered controversial, because those of us who are raising kids know that video games, we think, are much too prevalent in our society. The MacArthur Foundation and also technology industries are giving out prizes as part of this in a contest to develop video games that teach science and math. Should we get over the fact that, we don't like them very much, but they are what our children are dealing with on a daily basis, and if they teach science and math, that's all for the better?
Absolutely. I'm actually very, very committed to that, especially in my new role with the Mortgage Institute for Research, directing the Education Research Challenge area there. And I would like to point your listeners to a wonderful new book by a colleague of mine and his colleague. It's called Rethinking Education in the Age of Technology. It just came out, and it's by Collins and Halverson. The point I want to make, however, is that video games are where our kids are. They are spending time there. There's something that video games has done that engages the kids. And it isn't necessarily the violence, and it isn't necessarily all the bad things that we don't like about it. It's their way of providing kids an opportunity to try things in an environment where it's a good thing to have to try again. You don't get penalized for failure. You get new opportunities. Mm. There's some anonymity. Nobody is looking over your shoulder saying, oh, you didn't do good on that, that sort of thing. There's many, many good things about the learning, possible learning environment opportunities within video games. What we've seen, however, is that the video game industry has focused on content within their games, which isn't particularly relevant to the rest of our society. It's based generally fantasy content, although not always. And so what we have now is a great opportunity to take what we know from all this research in the learning sciences, take what we know about improved pedagogy or teaching and learning techniques in math, science, and engineering, of which there's a huge amount, and then hook that together with what we know from the games industry about engaging young people. And we actually are in the process of putting those pieces together on behalf of the future of our young people. And many, many good minds and resources are suddenly being moved into this area. And I just want to remind you that, when we think about the movie industry, for example, there's a lot of really awful movies, things that you don't want your kids to see.
Right.
Well, there's also really a lot of good movies that we want our kids to see, and it's the same thing here with respect to games. And we're calling these new games, or in some cases simulations for learning. And it's a different genre, but we want to keep the good of the exciting part of the existing video game genre.
Yeah, we're going to welcome phone calls. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And this hour of the program, we're talking about what happened, one of the things that happened, probably more than this, happened yesterday in the White House. Yeah, the president talked about a new initiative. The campaign is called the Educate to Innovate, and it is addressing the fact that middle and high school students have really not neglected, but they're not as on top of science, technology, engineering, and math as they should be to prepare for jobs of the future, areas like clean energy and areas that we haven't even thought of that will involve extensive math and science. And so it is multifaceted here. We've got a focus on the classroom, on bringing professionals in to the classroom. We've got video games part of this, that there will be prizes in a contest to develop games that teach science and math. Television programs like Sesame Street will have more segments that look at science and math. There will be a website, connectamillionminds.com. Science Channel will have also some special after-school programming. It's just a massive effort, and our guests are explaining why they're very much in favor of this. Susan Millar, senior scientist with the UW-Madison, Wisconsin Center for Education Research and director of the Education Research and Development Group of the Wisconsin Institutes for Research. Terry Millar is a professor of mathematics at UW-Madison, project director of System-Wide Change for All Learners and Educators, a comprehensive math and science partnership that is funded by the National Science Foundation. Later, the executive director of National Science Teachers Association will be joining us. So to your phone calls in just a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program today, David Plouffe will be joining us. David was the campaign manager for Barack Obama's historic presidential run, and he's written a very interesting and extremely forthright book about that whole campaign, The Audacity to Win, the inside story and lessons of Barack Obama's historic victory. So that's coming up, hour number two of our show. Let's take phone calls. 800-486-8655 is our number, and we start our calls with Steve from Madison. Hi, Steve.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm older and I don't like video games and not very technologically inclined either. But my 24-year-old oldest who plays World of Warcraft, he was telling me about the guild he's in and how a lot of the people he's playing with have really accomplished people and really high in education. And the guy who's running the guild is a very good influence, I think, for my kid to be, participating with. So.
And what is your child doing for a living, or is he in school?
He works as a glazier in glass, and he was challenged with high school, and he's trying to decide about more education or not. And but you know, in the meantime, you know, he's doing World of Warcraft. He's keeps him out of the bars, and he's listening. I mean, he's playing with people that are in there who are married, got kids, mm-hmm. Successful business people, and it's a good. And he's learning, and just by listening and doing, and he's getting input in the guild in terms of. You know, if you got ideas and you can contribute and make the whole process better.
Great.
I'm just really impressed.
That's a wonderful point. This is Susan Millar again. One of the things that video research on video games has shown is that the social networking and the learning that takes place precisely the way you described among peers working together in these massively multiplayer online environments is a very, very positive thing. And we also know this is aligned up with our research. Is that learning communities where students of slightly different ages and knowledge backgrounds interact around problems is a very powerful way for young people and adults to learn. So you beautifully make the point that I was hoping to make. Thank you.
Thanks so much for your call. We go next to Anton from Madison. Hi, Anton. Oh, no, that, yeah, Anton. Oh.
Yes, good morning, and good morning to the guests.
Hi.
Hello. So I'm eagerly listening to the conversation unfold, and I think this is a good point to jump in with my, quick question / example to share. And that is, I'm always very interested in hearing about ways that our country and applications, of course, much more locally than that, even are becoming interesting or perhaps proposed to improve learning in science, because I feel that a number of my friends and colleagues didn't get the exposure that perhaps they ought to have, or the exposure that they did have just didn't reach them.
Right.
Somehow it didn't capture their attention. And so I'm wondering, from your two points of view, does, of all the learning methods available to us today and the new ones being synthesized and researched and tested by yourself and your colleagues, how much of this, if any of it, might address or go to the point of somehow better exemplifying or better tying things that are very, very basic or introductory level theory access, like, say, in high school chemistry, for instance? How are we or are we interested in tying that to rational, very applicable examples of someone's current interests in their life as a very young person, or perhaps as a person entering college? Is there any kind of energy or thrust towards that direction?
Yeah, so I'll start, and I think Susan will probably have something to say on this too. So for me, I was handed a telescope at a very early age, and that generated excitement. I think excitement, intellectual excitement, is the thing that has to be nurtured, and that's oftentimes what is lost in pedantic, approaches that are within the classroom or in other contexts. So I think that the focus should primarily be to maintain the excitement, but with legitimate and correct content, so that people who catch this bug, so to speak, can then be nurtured and possibly even entertained as they move toward greater learning. Certainly, most of the people that I know in math and science, the reason they got into it is they absolutely loved it early on, and they continue to love it.
I really like your point also. There is a lot of research that shows that being connected to a context that matters to you is a great way in, just as Terry was saying. It's called problem-based learning, for example. That's a very well-established area of learning research. I also want to mention along these lines that there is a whole curriculum called Chemistry in Context, which starts with problems such as the ozone layer as experienced by Eskimos, problems with that or problems that come right out of the water in your neighborhood and so forth. And a colleague of mine who is on the editorial board for this particular textbook recently went to, believe it or not, China. China is adopting Chemistry in Context for its entire national curriculum.
Hmm.
This is powerful, because they are getting it. They know that they need to connect with their young people where they are, and I'm hoping that things such as the adoption of approaches called Chemistry in Context will be on the horizon for us here in the United States, adopting it widely. Because one of the main other problems that I want to make about the education research efforts is that we know a lot of very, very effective things. However, they tend to only be effective in little pilot spots here and there. And if your kid or your friends, Anton, don't happen to be in that little pilot, well, then they don't benefit, because we're not taking to scale the good things that we know.
Mm-hmm. Were you given a telescope when you were 5 years old as well, Susan?
I wasn't, and I'm a cultural anthropologist by training. And like Anton's friends, I probably kind of missed the boat on the excitement of science. But I'm coming back at it from another...
Yeah, I guess you are. I wouldn't say you missed the boat.
Well, I wasn't trained, as a scientist per se, but not as a physical scientist. I was trained, or a natural scientist. I'm trained as a social scientist.
Right. Let's take one more phone call for both of you, and then we're just same topic, changing guests. Jared from Green Bay. Hi, Jared.
Hi there.
Hi.
I just have a few comments about the whole concept of games being used in an educational manner. I do remember, like, back in elementary school, a few educational games, and honestly, I don't recall it as being a great game experience. Exactly what are you sort of, like, positing here?
You say it wasn't a great games experience?
I'm remembering things like Oregon Trail and a few math classes and so forth, and I guess while those were certainly educational, I really don't recall them as being the sort of thing that I would go back and play for fun.
Yeah. All right, so let me jump in there. So the original applications of computers to learning, came out of Carnegie Mellon, a guy named Anderson, and the concept was to replace the teacher. All right, and so that's a, I think that's a flawed strategy. I think the research has proven that those attempts to do that have failed. The game theory, as Susan said earlier, that is being brought to that is being developed here is being done in conjunction with learning theory and with embedded learning goals. So I think it's much what I hope that what comes out of this is a much more sophisticated approach than what you were exposed to.
Yeah, I think that your point is excellent, Jared. That some of the early attempts are not engaging enough. They don't incorporate some of the things that we know in the games industry really works. There has to be a sense of danger, of risk. Something has to be at stake. If it's too much like regular class, kids aren't gonna hook into it. And that's precisely why we want to keep experimenting with new approaches. And I think we're going to get there. And we're looking forward to testing. We will be testing all of these new games for learning science with kids and with diverse kids. We'll be in inner city Milwaukee talking to kids with Hispanic backgrounds in ninth grade, girls who are African American, rural kids in northern Wisconsin, all types of kids, trying to meet them where they are and find out what engages them and what we need to do to connect with them where they are.
Well, we'll talk with you again as you do all of that. Thank you both so much for being with us. I appreciate your time.
Our pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you. Susan Millar, Senior Scientist with UW-Madison's Wisconsin Center for Education Research, Director of the Education Research and Development Group of the Wisconsin Institutes for Research. Terry Millar is a Professor of Mathematics at the University of Wisconsin at Madison and Project Director of System-Wide Change for All Learners and Educators, which is a comprehensive math and science partnership. We're going to be continuing our conversation. This, in case you're just tuning in, what we're talking about this hour is a response to what happened at the White House yesterday. The president brought together, the president and two cabinet members, Secretary Arne Duncan, Education Secretary, and Stephen Chu, the Energy Secretary, met with all kinds of scientists and people from technology industry and students, actually, who are doing wonderful scientific and mathematical work in schools around the Washington, D.C. area. Sally Ride was there and people from industry and television stations as well, because they're a big component of this program. It's a program that was kicked off yesterday at the White House, and it stresses science and math education and ways to get students pretty excited about creating things for the world that we know we need and we don't know how to do yet, and it will require a whole lot of science and math education and minds that can move in that direction to take us to a new world. The program is Education to Innovate, and we're talking about that this hour of the show. Our next guest is the executive director of the National Science Teachers Association. Frances Eberle is going to be joining us. And our phone number is remaining the same, so please feel free to join the conversation at 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And we also have an email address. The email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org, for you to join our conversation. Okay, and we go to Frances right now. Hi, Frances.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm fine.
Good. Thanks for thanks for being with us. The president yesterday talked about a number of things. He related a conversation he had when he was in Shanghai, I believe, in China, talking about how do you get teachers? How do you recruit teachers for science and math education? And the response was that it wasn't hard to do because they are held in such great esteem. And teachers are paid on par with doctors and other people in those kinds of professions. What did you make of that? Do we need to do the same thing?
Well, I think that there's a different level of respect that's often given to teachers in other countries. And, you know, it varies from country to country, but Singapore is one that has a much higher regard and does recognize them in a much different way than we do in this country. It's not that I think the community doesn't think highly, but we don't, the compensation isn't nearly as equal, certainly as doctors. But partly, I think, many people who go into teaching really want to make a difference. And that's a really powerful motivation to do a good job.
Scientists and engineers, the president said, ought to stand side by side with athletes and entertainers as role models. You know, we keep saying that in this society, but it never happens.
Well, I think that this is the first time, if you sort of think back about presidents that have gone before our current President Obama, that you really haven't heard anything like that. You've heard about that we need to be doing better in math or science, but not really the same kind of motivation that he talked about or the urgency that he talked about just recently. And I do think that there's a difference in what's the environment right now and sort of general environment. And I think businesses realize this is very important.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm afraid the phone cut out here, so we're just going to have to carry on and try and reach Francis on a better line. In the meantime, we will just take your phone calls. You know what the subject is here, so we'll just roll along and get your thoughts about what you think about education to innovate the program announced, massive program announced by the president and scientists and the education secretary, the secretary of energy, and students and teachers from all over the country announced yesterday at the White House. We'll go to John from New Berlin, and we'll try to reconnect with Francis. Hi, John.
Hey, Kathleen. Great show, as usual. I just wanted to chime in. I just tuned in. And I think it's a great effort that the administration's making. We obviously need more math and science curriculum in this country. But if we have onerous taxation on those that strive to be great scientists and great mathematicians and achieve, say, a small business as a function of their brain power, we're not going to be able to compete worldwide. For example, Chinese models and Indian models have much lower taxation on their small businesses. Therefore, they're not putting the brakes on innovation as we are in this country right now. And I just wanted to hear your guest and your comment on that.
Mm-hmm. And so that would be something that we could do, lessen taxes on small businesses. What about what takes place in the classroom? The president yesterday talked about that's all important. Who's teaching in the classroom and the support that person gets and the fact that we can bring outside people in is all important. When you think of your math and science classes, were you excited by them?
Oh, absolutely. I still remember Mr. Olson, my science teacher,
Mr. Olson.
My chemistry teacher in high school. And the problem is we don't want to disincentivize our youth by saying that there's not going to be a future in this. We want to excite them, and I think it behooves us to excite them not only through ideology but also through a profit motive, which has basically made our country great.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't lose sight of that either, because you are driven, you know, to save money and make money, and as is everybody. And I think that part of the equation sometimes in curriculum and education is lost, and it's almost a scapegoat for negativity when it should be actually an incentive.
Hmm. And what about a profit motive for teachers? Should they be making more money, as the president intimated when he made the China reference?
Well, I think our teachers are underpaid. At the same time, I do think that we should have a merit-based pay system for our teachers. I've been in the education system for a long time. And it's about the only place I know in the world where you can do a poor job or a great job and get the same pay.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you so much for the call. I think, have Francis back on the line. If the line is really awful, we'll just have to say goodbye, because I don't want you to have to struggle to hear him. And we have a lot of phone calls, but we're going to give this a whirl again. Francis?
Yes, I'm here. I'm sorry about that.
That's okay. I think you're on a bus or something. I know. So
I am. I'm traveling. I'm unexpected circumstances. So
I understand.
I'm sorry about that.
No, I understand. We were just talking about the importance of great teachers, and I think that you can't beat that. You need somebody in the classroom, and we all remember those teachers. Do you have some in science and math particularly, or were you taught science and math in a dull fashion?
I actually did not have it from my family, but I think it was several teachers,
uh-huh,
really starting at about junior high and then high school. And one of the things that was particularly powerful for me, and I talk about this with to other teachers. In high school, I had the opportunity to do a project, and I chose a water quality study, and it was my senior year, and I was able to do my own science, or at least what I thought at the time. That's very powerful versus learning straight from a textbook.
Let's go back to phone calls for you. Caitlin is next from Oshkosh. Hi, Caitlin.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. How are you, Caitlin?
Good. I'm actually just on my way to school right now.
All right.
I am currently a student at UW Oshkosh, and I'm pursuing my education degree in science teaching.
All right.
I guess, I'm part of, it's interesting talking about how we got interested in science. I got interested in science growing up on a dairy farm, and so I learned so much from my dad and just, actually applying science. And, I think that's so important that right now in a lot of my classes we're learning about inquiry-based learning and that you need to be questioned and you need to experience things. And, and I think it's great that the president is actually trying to make some of this a priority in our country.
And what do you hope to be, a elementary school science teacher, secondary, or where are you going?
I'm hoping for high school, so I want to be able to teach and really get kids the tools to be able to succeed in science in a career. So I'd like to hit them when they're, middle school, high school age is what my certification will be in. So.
Well, I can hear the enthusiasm in your voice. It sounds great. Did you hear that okay, Francis?
I think that's really terrific. And I think you made a point that shouldn't be just sort of glossed over, and that's your own personal experience. And it's something that we're sort of in a conflict these days with so much electronic opportunities for learning, and that you don't get a sense of the realness of the importance of science or the wonderment or the amazement of things that can actually happen. And as you mentioned on your dairy farm, I know of a university level who would say that, particularly in physics, that they found students who had from a more rural background, really had a much more or a better conceptual understanding of the science. They didn't necessarily have the theoretical, but they caught up. And it's, when you think about some of the things that we do today, we do need to give students the opportunity to do things, to experience things.
I don't want to spend the whole hour on this. We will at some point. But what do you think about the emphasis in this education innovation program on video games, on developing educational video games, tapping into the profound interest that young people have in these games?
Well, you probably heard a bit of my remark. I think it has a role, and it certainly can engage certain students. But I'm not sure that there's research that would say that all students connect or really have that same level of excitement with those games. And there's such a huge variety. Some are very much real-world simulations. Some of them are, applications of particular science concepts. And I think what MacArthur is trying to do in some of their grants is to try to find out what really is the medium, what aspects of it that attract students.
Right.
But I don't think that they all do. I mean, not every student's going to connect.
Right. Many of them do, though.
But is it entertainment or is it learning? I think that's still an open question.
Right.
I would say that they're still experimenting themselves.
Well, go get them, Caitlin. Thank you very much for your call. Karen is next from Rolling Stone, Minnesota. Hi, Karen.
Hi.
Hi.
This is such a wonderful topic. Over 50 years ago when I was in high school, Sputnik went up, and I went to a very large high school in the Chicago area, about 5,000 students. Our physics teacher, Mr. Foreman, I will never forget him, and I'm still grateful to him. He put together what was called a science seminar. 40 of us got to participate. There were only 5 girls. I can remember that, too. And we were each paired with a mentor who was a scientist from our community. We got to help choose our mentors. So all 80 of us would meet every week on Wednesday evening from 7 to 10. We got to choose a research project with our mentor. My mentor was an MD who used hypnosis in his practice.
And oh, my.
So I got to do a research study that I designed with him about time distortion in hypnosis, and we would volunteer. The students would volunteer for each other's studies if they needed subjects. And the first hour was always spent with your mentor, just talking with your mentor. And the second hour was spent in problem solving, and we would work together in small groups to solve problems. The third hour, we would present the learning that we had done on our own during the week that was related to our project. And then we would always get a very difficult math problem at the very end, the last 15 minutes, that all 40 of us would talk about all week long when we saw each other in between classes and things. And none of us ever completely solved the problems, but we just couldn't wait for the next one that would come up. It was such a wonderful experience. I ended up not becoming a scientist. The chemistry lab was too lonely for me, and so I became an English teacher and had a wonderful career as an English teacher. However, I have always since that time thought in a scientific kind of a way, and it's been one of the greatest educational experiences of my life to participate in that. We could not miss. You could miss on Christmas, but we met through the year, and if you missed, you could not come anymore. It was just fantastic.
Oh, Karen, that's wonderful.
I still thank Mr. Foreman for that.
Yeah, isn't that amazing how we remember those people and their teachers? By golly, you need to write to the president about the program, don't you think?
Well, I'll be happy to do that because it was so exciting, and I'm so thrilled to hear that this is going to be happening. I have three grandchildren, and they love science. They're young. They're very young, but they love science, and they love the outdoors. We do lots of things out in nature, and this is such good news to me.
Her enthusiasm is infectious, isn't it, Frances?
Yes. I want to emphasize a point that she was making, which is the sort of connection. She's the example of a mentor, and that's really one of the things the president was talking about with the National Lab Day, that there's an opportunity to create or expand current partnerships with local community. And there is lots of expertise in community, and many students aren't aware of them. They spend time going on buses back and forth from school. Don't actually see what's behind those walls and buildings and what is going on, and it has a real powerful effect. And the other thing I wanted to just note, which I think is important, and not to get people confused about the emphasis that the president is making with this, is that his goal or our goal isn't to have everybody be a scientist. It's really to have just another dimension to your learning and your perspective on the world that includes some scientific literacy. You know, if you watch a sunset, you can still be in awe of the colors and the way in which it moves and has transference over time, but also you can sort of turn on your science side and begin to think about, you know, the particulates or the speed or the mirage that forms, and it sort of adds another dimension. So it's not to create lots of scientists.
Yeah. Karen, thank you so much for your call. I'm really glad you were listening. We'll welcome more phone calls in a moment at 800-486-8655. Frances Eberle is with us, Executive Director of the National Science Teachers Association. We're talking about the Educate to Innovate campaign that was launched at the White House yesterday, hoping to make students more interested and more proficient in science and math in this country. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The second hour of our program this morning, David Plouffe will be our guest. He was the campaign manager for Barack Obama, and he tells remarkable stories of how he started working with Obama and with David Axelrod back in 2002, I think it was, when they were looking at what their schedule should be for the next couple of years, deciding to concentrate some on the Illinois State Senate race. And Axelrod was most interested in Barack Obama. Nobody thought he would do anything, but he would be an interesting candidate with whom to work. And by golly, look what happened. So it's a profoundly interesting story that's coming up the second hour of our program. Back to phone calls. We go to Jackie from Madison next. Hi, Jackie.
Good morning, Kathleen. I think this is a wonderful subject. I'm married to a scientist, one of those horrible students who did a triple major in math, physics, and chemistry.
Woo!
Take some living with. My contribution to science was I used to hold the tray that they dissected the rat in biology. We're very different people. But I've been married to him now for 11 years, He's 65. He works in a biotech here in Madison. He gets up excited every day to go to work and to change the world. And he has taught me more science in these 11 years than I got all through school. And one of the things that I find astonishing about him, and I think is a gift, could be a gift to students, is he understands how everything in our house works. He invents solutions to problems because he understands how things work. And I see him talking to my friends' children and grandchildren, and he tells them why the bubbles change the size as they rise in a glass of soda, and they learn Stokes theory, and he teaches them why the spinning top is doing what it's doing, and they learn some other process. And I just think to bring these adults who've not just been in academia but have been into industry, who've invented products and processes and tools that people use, would be a wonderful gift that we could give them. And I'm trying to persuade him now, as he reaches that less execution, more fun part of his career, to get into the classrooms. And I think there's this huge untapped resource of people that could be out there exciting the kids with the practicality of what science brings to them every day.
What a great call. Francis?
Yeah, that is terrific. And I think the thing I would like to make a point here is that you talked about the excitement for students. And one of the things that we hear from teachers, science teachers in particular, is the struggle to make what they're teaching relevant to students' lives today. And I think we sometimes get caught up in the amount and forget about the world outside. And I know that really great teachers, and there are many of them, science teachers, are able to do that. And I think whether they use the classroom or they use outside the classroom, and I think what this effort's about is to begin to try to think about how to connect with the community and work together so that you have an opportunity to bring that world to your classroom, too. Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't that be wonderful to know how things work? You'd be looking at the world in a whole different way, wouldn't you?
Yes. Well, yeah, and you still have wonder because even when you know how they work, you sometimes are amazed. You know, you think about those, I don't even know what the planes are, but the very large military cargo planes. I mean, you see those things fly. You can't believe that they actually can hang in the air. When you certainly know the science, but, you know, sometimes it's the reality seems even stranger than it should be. But,
right.
Yeah, it adds a dimension to life.
Mm-hmm. Jackie, thank you so much for the call. Mike is next from Lodi. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm a school superintendent with the school district of Lodi. And let me just preface my comment by saying I visited schools in Thailand, Korea, China, and Argentina, and that we are currently using math software, computer games, to enhance our students' ability to grasp spatial-temporal reasoning, and that's out of the Mind Research Institute in Berkeley, California. But my comment is that I think the underlying premise to go for math and science so that we can compete with the rest of the world is not a good concept, that really we should be talking about our interdependence with the rest of the world and developing an economic model based on cooperation and not endless growth, because the endless growth model is going to destroy the planet. We need to learn how to get along with less and not more and more material acquisition, but focus on quality of life and civil liberties.
Francis.
Well, it's a really wonderful, wonderful postulate. I think that that's really a science concept in itself, which is, can we do the same with less? And how do you do that? You begin to think about energy. You begin to think about the chemistry behind that. It's an interesting idea. I think that there are lots of people who would like to work with us. I think it's a great way for students to get engaged. But we still need to continue to measure ourselves, see how we are doing against other countries. And I don't mean that in the sense of a horse race, which is often how people use the international testing, but rather as a benchmark. It does give us a way to look at it. It's actually part of the reasoning that we are where we are now, because I think that the recent international testing, it's really been 10 years, has sort of brought to light the continuous stagnation and, in some cases, decrease in our performance. And so it's not that I think that's a goal, but you do raise a very interesting point, and I think that there's opportunities to to do lots of different things, but, you know, your whole sort of postulate is based in the science concept. It's kind of a there are lots of different ways in which science has integrated into how we think about things. And that's part of the reason why it's important to help students understand it so they have a frame of reference for how they're thinking about things.
Mm-hmm. Francis,
I welcome the thought.
Thank you so much for being with us. Safe journey.
All right. Thank you.
Francis Eberle is executive director of the National Science Teachers Association. And just to explain what happened, his car evidently broke down and he found himself having to take a bus. And here's where science can help us. We need clearer signals on our cell phones, right, sometimes to make things work better. So he was joining us and there was just a little bit of feedback there. But an interesting hour. Thanks, everybody. Terrific callers, as usual, but even better today. You were just on top of the situation. We talked this hour about what happened at the White House yesterday and what will happen in terms of science education and math education all over the country. The president announcing the special program, Educate to Innovate. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and John Treader. We'll have more conversation following the news.